Sie sollen es verstehen, that his own personal approach in these matters, particularly in the on the question of promotion of, you know, how to promote the appreciation of basic human goodness and these values such as compassion among in the society, is not so much to present these ideas as spiritual or religious ideas, but really present them as universal human values, which really transcend the divisions of different religious traditions. And to a large extent, he was saying that he believes that the most kind of effective approach really would be to try to relate that to, you know, everyday human experience and also fundamental human disposition, that we all aspire for happiness and avoid, naturally try to avoid suffering. And even at some level, even the animals have that capacity. If you give something to an animal, they would appreciate that. If you approach an animal with a stick, they will run away. So if animals have that ability to distinguish, you know, what is, you know, if, you know, what is loving and what is caring and what is threatening, of course, you know, human beings, including children, will have that natural ability. So we need to get down to the fundamental disposition of human beings and really recognize.
Yes, yeah, I think sometimes I do feel at a young age, maybe basic human nature more fresh. When we grown up in the Gyoru Chaje.
And your beard.
And the papi.
Where there should be hair, there's a recession. Where there were no hairs before, there's more hair.
then suppose we are getting more wisdom. So we are calculate now. And basic human sort of the nature. And then sometimes I think
suppressed love declines.
Now we are emphasis on another level. Too much calculation. This is my feeling. Then on that level, maybe aggressive, sometimes useful. And compassion may not be so much useful. So we neglect even these good value, good things. And we, how to control other, how to use advantage on other, how to explore weaker people. Now compassion, now no longer has the relevant
role.
The aggressiveness and the intelligence. And the technology also now use on that level. So I think we can learn from the younger people. They may, I think their child may not as a distinction enemy or Hasoda.
Friends.
A friend. Even enemy, family enemy, Rwa. But the enemy gives some sweet. Oh, the child happily take. The elder, even though it's that person is giving you some beautiful gift, but capital it all. This is our enemy.
So to finish the translation, Solnit was saying that for many people, in fact, the more compelling reason is to really, you know, go back to the recognition of this fundamental disposition that makes us human being, and at a fundamental level, what we all share as these values, and it's compared to that, you know, trying to promote these moral values or spiritual values on the basis of some citation from scripture or some authority of religious figure, these are not really compelling, whether it is from the Buddhist tradition or some other tradition. So that's really at the basic level, but at a slightly more higher level, then one can take recourse in scientific findings where there is a much more detailed and kind of fuller explanation of the need for and the value of these emotions such as love, compassion, and so on. And his Holiness was saying that from many years, he has found it very compelling, the explanation in science where, the neuro medical science, where they found that in the first
one conference.
From one conference. the first few months of the infant's life, one of the key factors for the physical enlargement of the brain really is the mother-to-child physical contact. And today what became very clear in Michael Meany's presentation is what is the mechanism through which this really effect takes place, through this simple contact out of love. So we saw that today. So these kind of reasons based on scientific evidence can be very, very powerful, very convincing. So this is the kind of approach his Holiness finds much more useful, because they are
coming from basis of, in modern time, I think right. Basis of the human value, importance, the scientific findings.
So this is really a way of grounding the appreciation of the value of, you know, what are really fundamental human values. So in that sense, it seems more important on your part as scientist to give more explanation and give more evidence.
Scientific finding ka long chang go ba so the chang ke shi
wa so his Holiness was saying that in his own public talks he cites the scientific authority of the findings of science.
I think I agree with you that we have to keep providing more and more evidence, and that's what we do, but we really need help in disseminating the information. So we know a lot of information that could have very profound implications for the care and education of children. But the difficulty is, at least in the West, there isn't an interface between basic science and educators, physicians, and policymakers. So most educators and parents and policymakers don't know what Michael Meany told us this morning. They don't know that every aspect of human function depends on experience at critical times in development. But they need to know it. So I think it's wonderful that you are taking this information, because you do reach so many people that would otherwise not learn about this information. So that's one of the main issues that I wanted to discuss with you, was how we could go even further to getting these important bits of information out to everyday people, so that it could make a difference in the everyday lives of the people of the world.
His
Holiness's own personal view is that gradually there must be changes occurring, but to some extent, a lot of what we are discussing today is very new insights. So it takes time.
That media people, every occasion,
for example, there is a lot of interest and observation among the society about what is lacking, the problems. There are a lot of people who are concerned about what's going wrong in society.
And especially among the youth, among the student. And also some cases, the rate of suicide also, you see, increasing. So these are the problems. And I think the movement of peace, movement of against war, also increasing.
Opposition to war,
much increasing now. So now, people who involved in this field, they should have long-term plan how to eliminate this violence. Not through weapon, or not through counter because of the violence, but through change within ourselves, change in the society. So I think more and more people, I think, showing sort of the interest or willing to listen the scientists sort of what say they finding.
Find it.
I think so, but there are some
I think so.
Well, one way that we could perhaps promote peace without weapons is through parenting, for example. And so, that would imply that perhaps we should start educating our young children about what it takes to be a good parent when they're very young. Well, this is an idea that takes some time to implement in the schools, but I think it's a good idea that we should start parenting education with our young children very early. Well, and we have the evidence to show people who make policies about education why it's so important. And so I think it would be wonderful if we could find another means of making the changes occur faster.
But it has the center within the Chigda, Sondu Jasham to Saja Shevakaduria, and it has a Chig Shung Sosu in it. Benazam Nikas on it, the Nachidua. Peace in the Nachidua. Benazam Nikas on the Chulu, you got a Chig, got a Chig, interface with Chigsandra. To me, come to me. Ben a UNESCO education talk on a Chedding or that's your peace in the Tolanaji, that Ben had the peace days and a Chigdu. Oh, the limit gone in. And did it have a shaman? Yeah. Consuming that some jar of the day, petitions or nation music, sir. Yeah, oh, gee. That did. Gaz on your lovely gaz on it, the resolution chain in Shun Tamalog, Lumot Tamalog, that did. Any Labdana or the Lodge on Jawsaro. And that is a man.
One possibility is to. So of course we're all thinking aloud together. So this is another possible sort of idea that came. One possible avenue is to really, for the scientists, to particularly who are working in these kind of fields, to be much more proactive, and then take the opportunity to really kind of mobilize themselves together and approach, say, for example, the United Nations. So, for example, the United Nations is already involved in some social policies through the UNESCO in education and so on. And also some, you know, for example, they declare Peace Day and Children's Day and so on. So one way of doing this is to really go right at the top and have a lot of scientific data and have a kind of a clear-cut suggestion for programs. And then through the United Nations, make some declarations or appeal resolutions, which could then be expected to be adopted by the education policy of different, you know, nation states.
If the United Nations actually send out a resolution and propose it to the nations of the world, this would be a very good thing to implement in your education system or what have you. But kind of try a top-down approach.
That's a good idea, and then I think everybody would listen except the United States.
Well, nothing is permanent.
maybe
2 days America may not listen, but the next decade, new America may come. May happen.
Maybe after.
So the important is our constant effort.
Yeah.
Mm? We have truth. We are sincere. Eventually, time passes, truth itself spoke.
Speak
on. And that's important.
That's a faith.
Mm. Constant effort.
Your Holiness, related to this issue, in the United States, there is a very powerful entity, I'm sure you know about it, the National Institute of Health. And they have many different institutes within the National Institutes of Health. And it's interesting that it's called the National Institutes of Health. And one of the institutes is the National Institute of Mental Health. And there is a controversy, a battle going on as to how the institute should really conceptualize its mission. And it's related to this issue because although it's called the National Institute of Mental Health, it really should be better called, more accurately called, the National Institute of Mental Disease, because it is exclusively focused on disease. And so the idea of promoting virtuous qualities is still something that is foreign to some extent to the biomedical establishment, at least in the United States. One of the things that I think many of the scientists here are interested in is scientific evidence that we can document to illustrate the impact of certain positive experiences and positive human qualities in fostering well-being and in preventing mental disease, psychiatric disease. But this is still something that we have to argue for. It is not something that is taken for granted.
자라로 주는 때 대 돈은 자지 마다 자라 대 마용 공공한 걸 삼동에 넘기는데 버릇이 나를 믿어 봐. 근데 불리지 버릇이 나를 배질 믿어 봐. 자 대 걸리 걸리 무슨 좋아 치면.
This is a very very common human tendency. So you can see that throughout many different aspects. For example, various policies and so on. So the human approach tendency is to really, you know, deal with the symptoms. When problems arise, you deal with it as it arises.
That's actually a symptom. Mm. Something wrong, so that violence now take place. And till violence take place, no response. I think that's our, I think, past mistake. Mm. Now we have to think the preventive measure, more important.
More long-term strategy.
Long-term strategy.
Strategy, no.
So I think things, I think, may change gradually.
I think Richie's point is really important. It's actually a point that was touched on yesterday. It's even embedded in what we talk about. We're talking about prevention. So we talk about avoiding conditions that promote illness. Whereas yesterday, I think there was a comment made that what we need to do is to move and transcend that and talk about creating conditions that increase human capacity, happiness, and health. And that, actually, as Richie points out, we know very little about that. In fact, if you look at the literature on what defines good health in Western science, it's rather poor. So clearly, I think you're obviously very right that there is a good scientific basis for mobilizing, there's a good economic basis for mobilizing efforts in the area of prevention. But our challenge is not simply to prevent disease. It's, of course, to increase the word you used yesterday, exceptional, to make people move beyond the absence of pathology and to increase human capacity for a social good, to increase the happiness of the individual for their own good. That's really an area where we could use some help, I think, in terms of saying, what would you look for, not only in a program that prevents illness, but in a program that actually enhances health and happiness of the individual.
Do you want something to add?
I
have nothing to say. I think you two may have something to say on behalf of Buddhists.
On behalf of Buddhists. I can start a little bit.
Okay, Adam had something to say.
So I'll be very brief. But I think, Richie, when you use the word virtue, and the fact that the National Institute of Mental Health is very leery about venturing into anything that would even have the label of virtue, I strongly suspect their hesitation has to do with this absolute demarcation between church and state, that a national institute does not do anything that pertains to religion, and virtue is a religious term. Whereas in Buddhism, although virtue can be certainly understood in terms of sequence of lives, so karma, that's definitely one way of looking at it from a Buddhist perspective, you can also look at virtue, or now you can even take out the word, you can simply ask, what types of behavior, what types of attitudes, thinking, actually are conducive to well-being? So this crucial point that you left us with, that the point of intervention where we can really make a difference based upon your type of research is enhancing the well-being of parents and then watch the wonderful trickle-down effect. Well, then we can ask simple questions, but they're empirical questions. They're evidence questions. And that is, what types of behavior? As His Holiness was speaking of secular ethics. But not only external behavior, but what type of attitudes, what types of thoughts, what types of imagination can we adopt that are really conducive to our own and others' well-being, spouse, family, friends, society. And we don't need the word virtue. We can just simply say, in a very practical, empirical sense, what are the causes of well-being, mental well-being? And then we can say, again, leaving out words like sin, evil, non-virtuous, leaving that all out, we can simply ask, what types of attitudes, mental behavior, body, speech, mind, but very much including mental behavior, what types, whether or not we feel they're justified, like righteous anger, righteous contempt, righteous hatred, and so forth, whether or not we feel they're justified, what types of mental behavior especially are really antithetical to, or unconducive to, or damaging our own well-being, the well-being of those around us. If you couch it in that context, you've got a scientific problem on your hands and not a religious one, And I don't know why, in principle, the NIMH couldn't jump onto that bandwagon and say, well, this is going to be good for prenatal care and child rearing and education and so forth.
The problem that we face, though, I think, is when I speak with the people at the National Institute of Mental Health, the director and so forth, I'm very careful to cleanse my speech of all reference to virtue and terms of that sort. But even still, framing it in the kind of context that you describe, well-being, it is only tolerable if it's directly connected with the prevention of psychiatric disorder. And so it is not something that can be endorsed as an end in itself. It would only be acceptable insofar as it had a documented effect on the reduction of a specific psychiatric disorder.
If I might follow through with that, Richie, for myself, is there an underlying assumption there that normal is absolutely as good as it gets, and the exceptional is a pie in the sky or only for saints or for somebody else, that it's something that cannot be cultivated? Is that an assumption? But why this seemingly quite irrational bias?
Well, I think that's an issue that would be worth exploring. There are many people who want to speak, and I'll turn to them, but let me just make one point, which is that it seems in our culture, in Western culture, expertise in certain domains is valued. Exceptional qualities, for example, chess masters or Olympic athletes. But an attentional athlete or an athlete of compassion is not something that is prized in our culture. And so while I do think that there are recognized domains where expertise is highly valued, in the emotional domain, I don't think we quite have those same concepts.
Action-oriented, such as those.